Hello, and welcome to another segment of Open House here at Community Media. I'm your host, Raymond Galker, and this is a show that we open our doors to bring people in from our community that, you know, makes our community a better place to live. And I am so, I guess you'd say stoked or excited and thrilled to have Tim Smith with us here today on Open House. And Tim is a historian at the Adams County Historic Society, but he's also the Adams County historian. Tim, welcome to Open House.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Okay, so Tim, the Adams County historian, what does that mean?
Well, as I understand it, at some point, every county was slated to have like an official representative as a county historian. And I think this is a relatively new thing. It's not a historic thing, but different people were competing to get the job as county historian, and they ended up assigning it to Dr. Charles Gladfelter, who was the director of the Adams County Historical Society when I worked there. So he had been named by the county commissioners as the official county historian. And he, of course, he died. And for a while, we didn't have anyone assigned to that position. And it was really Andrew Dalton at Gettysburg History, the Adams County Historical Society, that suggested that I be named county historian by the commissioners of Adams County. So I was honored by being assigned to the position.
Mm-hmm. So I don't know of anybody that would be better than you for this position, really.
Well, I mean, I guess the part of the position is, know a little bit about all aspects of history in Adams County. And as an employee of the Adams County Historical Society, of course, I give lectures and programs to the school groups of Adams County. So that makes sense. But also, if there's some kind of question the county commissioners have about some historical event or things like that, I can lend my assistance to that. So I don't make any decisions. I don't tell people they have to have this type of door on their house or anything like that. It's not a any kind of regulations that it's just but maybe I would like maybe a group of people I'd call the history police, that if somebody's giving incorrect information, we can go out and give them a ticket or
give them a ticket,
yeah.
Write them up.
But we don't have anything like that.
No, but you work with a lot of historians.
Yeah.
And they're very passionate about what they do and what they know and what they have researched.
Yeah, and I came up through the field with a bunch of other historians. And if you think about it, because we have the Battle of Gettysburg was fought here, and we have so many people that live in the area because they're interested in the battle that have written about the battle or are historians. The licensed battlefield guys who give tours of the battlefield, almost every one of them you would refer to as a historian. And then we have Gettysburg College that has a strong history department. So we have a lot of historians. Now, you may find this interesting. I never went to college. I do not have a degree in history. I started after high school just learning a lot about Gettysburg and the area around it, and then moving into the area and becoming a tour guide. And then in the 1980s, I started to volunteer at the Adams County Historical Society and under Dr. Charles Gladfelter. He had been dean at Gettysburg College. For many years, he was in the history department, and he taught historical methods. And all of a sudden, he had retired, and he was working, at the Historical Society. That was his full-time job, and he didn't have any students anymore. except me. So every day I felt I was like in his historical methods class. So amongst other people who had a strong influence in my life and history, you know, I learned how to conduct historical research from the man who would be the county historian.
Dr. Glatfelder, he was amazing.
Yeah, his memory was fantastic. Now, people say I have a good memory, but Dr. Glatfelder, you know, just as an example, knew all the vice presidents. Who knows all the vice presidents? He knew the birthday of each president. He would say, hey, you know, today's William Howard Taft's birthday when we come in. And, you know, he just, the knowledge that he was able to exude just off the top of his head was intense. And if he didn't know the answer to a question, he would know where to look to find the answer. Mm-hmm. And that's something I just always respected.
And he was relied upon when people had questions.
Yeah. And, you know, at the Historical Society, because we're the County Historical Society, we answer all kinds of questions. So, sure, we get to people that are coming to write a book on the Battle of Gettysburg or local history topics of some form or fashion, but we also get people that are doing their genealogy and simply want to know who their grandfather is. And since we act partly as the county archives and have the estate papers and the tax records, we also get people who want to know how old their house is. So we get property research, genealogy, you know, historical research. So we sort of do it all there. And he was very helpful to everyone that came in.
So where did you originate?
Well, I'm from Baltimore. And when I think I was about 12, and I'm sure like many families that live, you know, near the city, my dad decided to move to the country. So we moved to Northern Carroll County, which I guess in the bigger scheme of things, I lived about 15 miles from Gettysburg. So I grew up as a teenager in farm country of Northern Carroll County. And, you know, I could ride my bike to Gettysburg. So, and I always was interested in the Battle of Gettysburg and learning about history in the area. And I would come here a lot. And then eventually, I moved to Gettysburg. I left my, I abandoned my family in Maryland, mm-hmm. my brother says, and I decided to live in Gettysburg. And how can you do that when you move to town? I became a licensed battlefield guide.
So at what point in your life did you realize history kind of was an interest and then it became a passion of your heart?
A lot of people ask me that when I got involved in the Civil War. Looking back on it, I do not remember a time when I wasn't totally absorbed by the American Civil War or history in general. I don't have a moment like that. I remember being in first grade, and we went to the school library, the elementary school library, and all the kids were over there looking at Curious George books. And I found a book on the Civil War in the other section. Mm-hmm. You know, I always had that. I remember it was like in a second grade that I was in trouble with the teacher for, I wasn't paying attention. I don't think I was the best student. And the teacher made me get up in front of the class because I must already know the subject. And he said, do you know all the presidents? And of course I was said yes. And I recited all the presidents.
Oh boy.
And the teacher was a little stunned by that. Where do you come up with this? And I don't even know. I just always seem to like history. I like the orderliness of history. I like, you know, things to be organized very well. And studying history and learning the facts about history is the easy part. Interpreting the history is a little more difficult.
It's easy for you, Tim.
Yeah.
It's easy for you. Memorizing, that's not a gift that I was given.
I can't remember a time when I didn't know all the generals at the Battle of Gettysburg or the monuments and which monuments they represent. So it was just something I was always into.
become a scout? Were you into the Boy Scouts at all?
Or no? Nope. I think, you know, like most people, I was a Cub Scout. I think I made it to Weeblos, but
Okay.
I didn't do any of the camping or anything like that.
Right.
So,
okay.
Yeah.
So when you guys moved up from Baltimore, where you were living, Carroll Valley, you said?
Carroll County.
Mm-hmm. County.
Yep.
On a farm or just in town?
It was a modern house, but it was in the middle of the farms. Yep. Okay. Basically, the name of the village it's near is Silver Run. Which is not far, down 97.
And then you'd ride your bicycle?
Yeah, I could ride out to Backstone Road and then up like 194 to Littlestown and then across Gettysburg Road and up 97.
And how old are you now?
When I was doing that, maybe 14.
14?
Yeah.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
14.
And then, of course, when you're 16 and you get a car, you can spend as much time on the Gettysburg battlefield as you want. And
so, you know, this is the place you wanted to visit. This is the place you like coming. And when you came up here and you rode those bicycles when you were 15, 14 years old, is there a place that you would go to first?
Well... conveniently, if I came up the Tawnytown Road or crossed to the Tawnytown Road, you know, the closest place to where I lived is like Big and Little Round Top. So I spent a lot of time at Big Round Top, Little Round Top, and Devil's Den. So definitely the southern end of the field.
You'd ride your bicycle. That took you about...
Yeah, I have no idea.
Yeah.
A couple hours.
Really? You know? You know, it would have been hard for my parents to get me to clean my room, more or less get me on a bicycle and drive 2 hours to go to a place where I think I had a passionate connection. But at that point, you didn't really, you knew there was a connection, you knew there was joy of being here.
Yeah. I think a lot of people tell you that when they come to Gettysburg or come into an area that's really historic and they somehow you feel the history of the site and it you get a special feeling being there that you don't have when you're in other places. And it's odd because I've never attributed that feeling to anything spiritual or ghostly. I think a lot of people, you know, do. I just thought, wow, it would be really nice to try to make a living, you know, and be here all the time.
At what point was that now?
You know, maybe when I was in my late teens, early 20s. But, you know, the thing is, you know, can you make it, you know, in the field of history, you know, especially when I didn't go to college and didn't have a history degree, or you know, can you make a living or, you know, but I tried it and I was successful. I had other friends that moved here when they were young too, tried to make it here and didn't make it. And I could see that it was, you know, it was tough, especially in the winter. We don't have many visitors. There's not, you know, if you're relying on the tourist industry to keep you going, it's not really going to happen.
And basically you had to become a tour guide.
Yeah. Becoming a tour guide was very fortunate for me. And I got to tell you, it's just, you know, when I became a tour guide, you know, I'm sure modern tour guides would say, oh, the test was easier then. Well, maybe. But it was mostly memorization, which I already had the advantage of. So it was easier for me to memorize the facts. And there, you know, if you just got a certain score, you passed, you had to take a ranger round, but you became a tour guide. You know, you got a license. And then it opened up a whole new world for me.
And you're 20 years old at this time.
No, I don't. When did I become a tour guide? So, no, I became a tour guide. I passed the test in 91 and 92, became a tour guide. So, when did it be? I got to count. So, I was in my late 20s. For a while, I drove a truck. I delivered it. I was happy just to hang out at Gettysburg, and I drove a truck, and I delivered building materials.
For what company?
It's no longer around, but it was in Silver Run.
So now you're still living in Silver Run?
I moved here in the late 80s.
Okay.
But I kept my job in Silver Run.
Okay. So you lived here and went down to Silver Run, made your money, and then came up here, and was at peace and joy just being on the battlefield. And I'm sure that at this point, 17. Well, let's go back to you have you're 16 and you have your license. Instead of riding the bicycle, now you're driving your car. And when you come to Gettysburg, what do you do?
Well, I think, you know, one thing is interesting. You want to try to talk to other people who have an interest in history and interest in which you are, you know, the same interest. And, you know, I think there were very few people that I met when I came to town in the 80s that seemed to have an interest in history. I think, you know, Ken Burns' Civil War series came out. And when that came out, then there were more visitors that were interested in the battle. But then I got a job in one of the local relic shops, Fields of Glory. And the guys that worked there I had met. And, it was perfect for me because people would come in and want to buy some Civil War-related item. And, you know, I knew about the Civil War, so I could talk to them while I was a salesman for them. Behind the counter, and that worked out pretty well. But then you could go into a restaurant, maybe meet somebody that was interested in war and talk to them. I love to talk to people about the battle and see what people are interested in. And, you know, early on, the Farnsworth House was one of the few Civil War restaurants in town. Go to the plaza, there wasn't too many people at the plaza that were talking about the battle.
Mm-hmm. The Dobbin House, though, was...
Yeah, the Dobbin House. And at that time, for those not familiar, the Dobbin House bar was more of a bar. It was mm-hmm. more of a lounge where locals would go and sit. And now, you know, it's more of a tavern for eating at the moment, not a pure bar. But, yeah, and Marvelous Marv's. Always liked Marvelous Marv's.
I remember that place, yeah.
So the other thing that was interesting that I did was I went to all the different shops around the town, and I went into all the museums in the town during the late 70s and early 80s. So I remember, like, the Prince of Peace Museum or the Blue and Gray Museum or, you know, the old Rosenstiel Museum. So I'm much interested in the tourism and commercialization and the history of Gettysburg's tourism and commercialization as much as the history of the battle. And so I have a memory of all these different places that used to be around, museums that lasted for only a short time. And, you know, and so people, there's a whole group of people that love to discuss that. And I do videos on our Gettysburg History YouTube channel relating to the early commercialization. And I collected photographs and postcards of the battlefield, and I would take my postcards around the battlefield and line up the postcard scene with the modern scene, kind of doing it my own then and now.
And you take pictures?
And
or you just...
I wasn't much of a photographer. I wasn't much of a picture taker. Now, my friend Gary Edelman, of course, you know, he took photographs when we first met in, I'm guessing, the 1990, I'll just guess, 1991. He would always bring his video camera and his camera and take photographs. So we have lots of photographs at that period, but not by me.
Gary.
Yeah.
So you're 20 years old. You're still not living here, right? No, you're living here, and you're working down at Silver Run,
yeah.
And then you're working in Fields of Glory on
yeah.
at the same time. And you begin to go around and meet people who have museums or a shop that mm-hmm. people can come to and trade or just learn more about the battle. You're forming a group of people that have the same passion at this point.
Yeah, but I wasn't a leader of any kind of group. I would, I would see these other people that already had these established groups, like the Association of Licensed Battlefield Guides. Even if you're not a licensed guide, you can become part of the association, hang out with people who were licensed battlefield guides. Or, you know, I knew all the shop owners, and then, you know, we have really, we had one big relic and book show every year here at Gettysburg around the anniversary. But they have other relic and book shows and other areas, around that you can travel to also. And so I knew all the dealers of all the booksellers and artifact dealers, and I would hang in that circle too, going to all the different shows and stuff that they would have.
Who are the people that you love to talk to at this point?
Some people that I talk to that, you know, I look back and say, wow, it was really nice to hang out and talk to them, were people like Leroy Smith, who, you know, even then I knew that he was like the guru of the tourist industry and had, you know, the tour bus concession and had, you know, had his hand with the Hall of Presidents and the Soldiers National Museum and the Jenny Wade House Museum. For those of you who don't know, he'd always hang at Marvelous Marv's. You could talk to him on a Sunday afternoon there. Or Walt Lane. Walt Lane came to Gettysburg after World War II. I think he started his photography business on Chambersburg Street in 1947. And he retired in, I think, like 1993. But he made postcards. I was really into postcards. And he took everybody's photograph. And today, the Historical Society has his photographic collection. And then, of course, you know, early on in my travels, I met William Frasinito. And he had that book. He came out in 1975, Gettysburg, A Journey in Time. And his work, especially using the photographs that were taken of the battle in the battlefield to learn more about the battle, was something I was really intrigued by, the whole then and now concept. And we became friends, and I even assisted a small bit in his early photography at Gettysburg book that he published. And I still see him on a regular basis, and we have great discussions. There were some other people around the town professors at the college, or like Charles Gladfelter. I think the best step for me in my career was branching away from the Battle of Gettysburg into the history of the area. Since, I was living here and I was in the history anyway, a lot of people just stay in learning about the battle, not the local history. And I've done well to try to incorporate the town and the farmers who lived around the battlefield into my discussion of the battle. So I wanted to know what it was like for the people who lived here at the time of the battle and what they went through. And that led me to learning more about local history.
So when do you start working with the Historic Society again?
I think I started volunteering. I was a volunteer. Like, I think anybody wants to be, like, get a job with a nonprofit, you have to volunteer there first, right?
Right.
So I started volunteering there in 1989, I think it was. And, I should mention that there was a short time when, after I started volunteering at Historical Society, where I had my own little, TV show at ACTV. And I wasn't a regular show. I wasn't on like every week, but I had a little history show. I have no idea what we called it.
We'll have to look in our archives.
We filmed little half an hour segments, mm-hmm. Or little history presentations. Mm-hmm. And I remember a few of them. And I remember I'd be on like After the John Show.
There you go. Yeah.
That's a local reference that people get.
People will know.
The John Show.
I remember we worked a lot with the Historic Society. We would film some of their speaking engagements and stuff back then.
Yeah.
And I was always impressed with Dr. Gladfelter. So you volunteer, and by volunteering, they had you do what?
Usually when, even today, when we get a volunteer, and of course the Historic Society has, we have like almost 100 people that help as volunteers. Some help in the museum, and we had a museum then, so I'd give museum tours upstairs in Schmucker Hall, and then we I was given a research project, you know, to organize a certain research collection. And eventually, after volunteering there a few times a week, they decided to branch out and open up the Historical Society on Thursday nights to get it, maybe provide more hours for the public and get some more, you know, membership. And they asked me if I'd like a job, you know, running the Historical Society on Thursday night. And so I started running on Thursday night, and then, you know, changed employees. They asked me to run the Historical Society on Saturdays, and this was more of you're in charge. There's nobody else here. Mm-hmm. Just boom, you know. And so I started running on Thursday nights and Saturdays, and then it just eventually increased into more of a full-time job.
And at this time, Dr. Glatfelter is noticing you?
Yeah, well, Dr. Glatfelter had had retired from being the director. He retired as a director of the Historical Society, and then we had a guy named Russell Swody. So it was actually Russell Swody that hired me. But Dr. G came in there still until he died. He came in every week.
And this was your opportunity to really get close to him?
Yeah, yeah. I'd always been, you know, close to him, but yes.
Okay.
Mostly when I was a volunteer, though.
So once you volunteered, that's when your relationship with Dr. Glatfelter started?
Mm-hmm.
Where you almost had a one-on-one internship with him.
That's right. I know. I would call it that, like an internship.
Mm-hmm.
Really, really good. And for those of you who knew Dr. G and thought he was kind of stern and, you know, he was unapproachable, his sense of humor was remarkable.
Mm-hmm.
It was a really dry sense of humor. He never laughed after he told a joke. And you didn't know he was joking sometimes.
Yeah.
Great guy.
Yes.
But, you know, today, the Historical Society, you know, we've been in a few different places. The Historical Society started in the 1940s in the basement of the courthouse. And then in 1962, we opened a museum in the old dorm of the Lutheran Seminary, and we leased the building from the Lutheran Theological Seminary. We had a museum and archives, and we rented there until 2011. And then, you know, we helped to renovate the Lutheran Theological Seminary building, the old dorm, into a museum. And we moved out to another location. And at first, we thought that move would be temporary until we built our permanent building and headquarters, and it took a few years. So in 2023, we completed our new building, and we've moved into that. And now we merged into a thing we call Gettysburg History. So it's not just the Historical Society anymore. We have the Shriver House downtown. We have an events center where we run programs pertaining to local history. And, you know, we delve into the Battle of Gettysburg and other history topics. And, of course, we help to run the Gettysburg Film Festival, which has been very successful, coming up again here soon. And we also have purchased the Jack Hopkins House on South Washington Street and are going to open up a local Gettysburg Black History Museum. So we call this sort of Gettysburg history as sort of an umbrella. So now the Adams County Historical Society and Archives is just one small part of this broader history initiative.
Ability to tell the story and show the story.
Yeah. And again, our main focus is to talk about the people who lived here and how they were affected by the historical events that occurred around them.
But the Civil War isn't the only history.
And, you know, I mean, I always look at it like it's a watershed moment in our history. So I know that when I first came to the Historical Society as a volunteer and a member and then, you know, young employee, I noticed that there was a lot of people in our county that wanted to push aside the Civil War history. Like, the Battle of Gettysburg, something they talk about up there, you know, that's not our, let's talk about something else. And that's fine and well, but there's a lot of people that come here every year to visit the Gettysburg Battlefield. So if we get a certain amount of those people over to us and to visit us, it really helps us. You know, why shun the base of tourists that are coming here in large numbers?
Right.
What I like to do is also tell the story of the Battle of Gettysburg, but just put it in the context of the people who lived here at the time, and, you know, not just in Gettysburg, but in New Oxford or York Springs or, you know, or Fairfield, and talk about the story of the civilians during the Gettysburg campaign. And thereby we can use that to draw people to our museum. Our museum at the Adams County Historical Society, you know, is a third Civil War. But then while they're there, they're going to learn about the things that happened in the county prior to the Civil War and the things that happened from the Civil War to the present day also. So we got them in there, and we can give them our local message. And also, our local history is not that much different than other people's local history. So we try to tell the same story of national events, but just through our local area.
Our lens.
Yeah, through our lens.
Just off the side a little bit, Tim. Mm-hmm. First of all, I'm honored to be sitting with you. I do respect your title. I respect your abilities. I respect your passion. And most of all, I respect your love for our community, you know. And so during the Battle of Gettysburg, what was happening here in New Oxford?
So you know, of course, Eastern Adams County is, you know, fascinating, and it saw its share of troops, maybe not battles, but prior to the Battle of Gettysburg on Friday, June 26th, Jubber Early's division, depending on how you count, something like 7,000 men, came over the mountains from Franklin County and marched through Adams County, captured Gettysburg. And on June 27th, General John B. Gordon's brigade, with some men of the 17th Virginia Cavalry in front of them, marched from Gettysburg across to New Oxford. On the way, they burned a railroad depot at Golden Station. They destroyed the bridge across the Conewaga Creek, north of, just a little north and west of New Oxford. They captured the town of New Oxford. They didn't stay here long. And then they kept moving east. They marched through Abbottstown, and they spent a night at Farmers. So that was about 2,000 men. In the same time, the other three brigades of Jubber Early's division marched basically across out through Hunterstown. They actually spent a night in Mummersburg, went through Hunterstown and Hampton and East Berlin, and marched into northern York County. Of course, on June 28th, they captured York, Pennsylvania, and they threatened the Susquehanna River at Wrightsville. But then when Lee ordered for the concentration of his army, these troops marched back across through Adams County. And I think Colonel Elijah White's 35th Virginia Battalion of Cavalry came through New Oxford on June 30th and then rode up towards Heidlersburg. But so we had troops marching back and forth through the area. And, you know, besides all that, there was a company of New Oxford men that actually the company was, I guess, raised in Hanover, but partly with New Oxford men that were a part of the 26th Emergency Regiment and were in a skirmish against the Confederate Army on June 26th. And men from this area also served in a regular army. So there's lots of Civil War tie-ins for each of the areas in our county to talk about. And, you know, if you go over to the New Oxford Cemetery, you'll find people buried there that are involved in the Gettysburg campaign and the armies, Civil War armies as a whole. But I find that interest very, very interesting. And I always like to tell people when they talk about different aspects of Adams County that, you know, we have 21 townships and, 15 incorporated boroughs. So each little place has its own story and own history to tell.
Similar culture.
Yeah.
And then you look at Hanover. Hanover also had a spillover.
Yeah, there was on June 30th, there was the battle at Hanover as Jeb Stuart's men were coming through Hanover and, of course, looking for Lee's army and get entangled with Kilpatrick's division that's coming. So Jeb Stuart was coming up from Union Mills, and Kilpatrick's division was coming from Littlestown into Hanover, and they clashed into each other, and there's a battle. What I find is interesting is on June 30th, while the battle's taking place in Hanover, I mentioned a group of Confederate cavalrymen that are coming across and reach Abbottstown and ride into New Oxford, and they must hear the fighting taking place a short distance away. And there's no effort to, you know, communicate with them or talk to that group of people. That's one of the what ifs, you know.
Right.
What if Jeb Stuart could have figured out where he was going?
Mm-hmm.
You know. But yeah, Hanover's got a little battle too. So there are other battles around the area besides the Battle of Gettysburg. It's just that the Battle of Gettysburg is such an enormous thing. You know, the bloodiest battle in American history. It kind of overshadows some of the other stories and history around.
And then you focus on the civilians.
Yeah.
What they were going through.
Yeah.
Now, I heard stories that in Gettysburg they were on the rooftops and sometimes hiding here and there. Would that have been the same here in New Oxford when the troops
came
through?
Yeah, I'm sure after the battle got going, the people here can hear it. And they're probably wondering what is going on. And they're, you know, fearing the worst. Or I guess New Oxford made out easy because the Southern Army didn't camp here for the night. It was just passing through for a few minutes.
Mm-hmm.
So there wasn't as much damage done. But the Confederate column took every horse they could find in the area from every farmer. And they gathered up cows and, supplies.
Is it true that some of the farmers would hide their horses and cattle on the second floor?
I've heard of, I don't know, on the second floor of the house, but you do hear there's a couple near Fairfield. I know we have an instance where they hide some horses in their bedroom, you know, in the mm-hmm. back bedroom, and say, you can't go in there, you know, grandma's sick. Yeah. Or there's a great story where they put a whole bunch of horses in a cellar, and then they have the kids run back and forth and create a whole bunch of noise on the front porch
mm-hmm.
so that the Confederates don't hear the horses and cows in the cellar.
Mm-hmm.
So you want to, I think you want to hide them in the woods though.
Mm-hmm.
So some people were successful to hiding their animals and others were not.
I'd like to see them get them down in the basement. You know, that's still, what's your favorite story?
About something that pertains to this area. So as the Confederate soldiers are marching towards York, Pennsylvania, Juber Early writes about this in his memoir, and it's actually written a few other places, that he passes several farms, and the farmers are staying on their porch, and he says they're gyrating their hands in some kind of weird gestures. And he thinks that maybe they're Pennsylvania Germans, they're putting a hex on them or something.
Mm-hmm.
And so he sees it, you know, too many times, and he tells one of his staff officers to go over and find out what's going on. And the farmer tells him that there's a group of guys about 5 miles ahead of the Confederate advance, and they are going to farmers, and they are selling them for $5 a membership to the Knights of the Golden Circle, an organization of Northerners who are Southern sympathizers. And if you buy one of these memberships, they'll give you the secret sign that you can flash to the Southern Army so they don't destroy your property.
Oh, okay, they were spammed.
And apparently just like two guys from New York State that are doing this, you know. Seems like a good idea to make money, yeah. You know, in a situation like this. So, you know, the other thing you learn about the whatever aspect of history you study is people are people. They're not different then than they are now. There are people who are very brave. There are people that are cowards. There are people that are taking advantage of the situation. There are people fighting with each other over politics during the Gettysburg campaign. It's you know, the same kinds of people that we have today. We're living in these different historic time periods. And things, the more things change, the more they're the same.
So when we go back into I want to say 1600s, we're going back to the time where there was a lot of Indian reservations. They wouldn't be reservations. They'd be living in this area. And then this area was built from Lancaster to York to Adams.
Well, it's fascinating in the sense that in a, you know, bigger sense of time, I try to explain to the school kids that, you know, Native Americans or humans have occupied this area, Pennsylvania, for some 10 or 12,000 years. And, you know, European immigrants that came into the area that we're related to have been here for about 300 years. So Native Americans occupied 98% of Pennsylvania's human history. And we know very little about the people who lived here before us, except what we find in the fields that they left behind, mostly stone implements and artifacts that they left behind. William Penn received the charter from Pennsylvania in 1681. And at first, you know, the settlements are around the area of Philadelphia and Delaware. And as they started moving west and making contact with Native American groups in our area, William Penn was actually pretty good at signing treaties to allow settlers to move into an area. Now, you know, the Native Americans' idea of what ownership of land was versus our idea of ownership of land is much different. You can see that because in 1636, when the first treaty is signed to allow settlement west of the Susquehanna River, it says something like that the William Penn and his settlers have rights to all the land from the Susquehanna River to the setting sun. So it's pretty vague, and then they revise it from there. But it's early on, we're part of one of three Pennsylvania counties. And this area originally is Chester County, Pennsylvania. And then Lancaster County, Pennsylvania is founded in 1729. And we would be actively part of Lancaster County during the first years of settlement. So the first settlers came over the river into York and Adams County area in 1736, legally. Although there were Marylanders coming up in the early 1730s, because again, the boundary of Maryland and Pennsylvania is nebulous at that time. But they settled through this area. In Lancaster County, the first roads, the Monocacy Road laid out in 1740 is a Lancaster County road. Some of the townships date from our period that were Lancaster County, although they don't have strict boundaries of the townships. And then in 1749, York County is formed, and we are York County. And we're York County at the time of the American Revolution. Our first town is established as a York County town, Abbottstown, in 1763. And Hunterstown, and East Berlin, and McSherrystown, and Littlestown are all established as York County towns. And a lot of the roads are laid out in York County. So, and pretty much it's Germans and Scotch-Irish settlers moving west from the area of eastern Pennsylvania, with Marylanders moving up into the area also, with, you know, English and Quakers kind of mixed in at first. But at the time of the American Revolution, we are definitely on the frontier of Pennsylvania.
And during that war, expansion kind of slowed.
Yes, and really, expansion slowed here during the period of the French and Indian War. So, you know, it seems like the Germans move into an area, establish roots, and start farming. And the Scotch-Irish, they want to keep moving. They want to keep moving to more land, and you know, maybe they establish the area for German immigrants to move in and settle and sell to. But during the French and Indian War, when Native Americans in western Pennsylvania sided with the French and Native American Shawnee and Delaware warriors raided the frontier settlements and wreaked havoc along the frontier. It was much worse in Cumberland County, which, of course, today is Franklin and Cumberland County. That was all Cumberland. It was much worse out there. And there was murders and raids. And pretty much the people that lived over there fled over the mountain range and into our area and maybe points farther eastward. I think also we have this idea that these Native American, or I should say that the early settlers, were all well-armed. I think that comes from watching like Daniel Boone or Walt Disney's Davy Crockett. And I don't think they had as many weapons as we imagine, and that, you know, especially some of the Germans are more peaceful and not as fiery as the Scotch-Irish. And the people out here along the frontier didn't have a way to defend themselves against these early raids. And one interesting thing about Pennsylvania is because of William Penn and because the Quakers dominated the government at that time, there wasn't a lot of tax money being spent on defensive work such as forts or you know, state militia. And so the people on the frontier were left to fend for themselves. And we had several bad incursions into the area of Western New York County here in 1758. And people were kidnapped, people were murdered. And so when William Pitt takes control in England and decides to get serious about the war and sends British, you know, troops, and provincial troops are raised, men who lived here on the frontier joined together in companies and joined the British in the Forbes expedition, which finally captured, you know, Fort Duquesne near Pittsburgh and ended that threat. But even after that, we had violence and raids, such as what we refer to as Pontiac's Rebellion in 1763. And the British government, you know, war is expensive, and supplying troops to forts in the area to defend the settlers who were constantly pushing westward and causing, you know, violence with the Native Americans that lived in that area. That's one of the reasons it led to the British establishing a demarcation line in 1763 and saying no settlement will move west from here. And I think the people who lived in eastern Pennsylvania in our area were upset by this. And not just Pennsylvania, all the colonies. They saw this land out there. They saw, and they believed it was their right to move into that land, especially after the victory in the French and Indian War. And now the British government didn't want them to move westward. And this would be one of the things that led to, the causes of the American Revolution years later. But so I would say around the time of the violence of the French and Indian War, settlement into the western area of Pennsylvania was halted, you know, and it would take a while, probably after the Revolution, for them to really start moving westward.
Tim, I could keep on going, but I know that we're going to be using your talents as we work with the New Oxford Historic Society to look at some of the landmarks in this area and tell the story. And you will be coming back. What? Before we go, though, I do have a question or two. What's the most interesting question a student ever asked you?
Well, you know, kids ask the best questions. You know, kids don't put much thought into what they're going to ask. And so I find it interesting when a kid asks a question. And sometimes you want to laugh. But one time, I think the most interesting question I ever got is one kid one time asked me, where did all the men go to the bathroom during the battle?
Okay. All right.
The way he asked it was just great.
And he got a good response from his...
I think, you know, I'm always going to be sarcastic whenever somebody asks me a question. Uh-huh. My initial comment is going to be sarcastic. I probably learned that from, like, Paul Lynn on Hollywood Squares, you know. But I think I said something like, well, if you're in a battle, don't worry about that. That'll take care of itself, you know.
Right.
Let him think about that for a second. Kids do ask great questions. One kid asked me one time, you know, how did they know if somebody was a northerner or a southerner when they buried them in a cemetery? And I said, well, they had their accents. They checked their accents. You know? They love that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. But I'm sure there's others. You know, we're fine to getting the question of why don't the monuments have bullet holes in them, or, mm-hmm. you know, why are all the battlefields, you know, a national park property or things like that. Mm-hmm. You know, tour guides get a lot of questions, mm-hmm. but it's great. So I was a tour guide doing tour buses for, you know, 35 years. So I've done hundreds of school groups, mm-hmm. and, you know, it's just great. Because, you know, people come here, and I imagine when the kids come here, I imagine it was like when I came here on an eighth grade school trip, and you're excited, and people like to learn about the battle.
Mm-hmm. So, your most enjoyable part about being the Adams County historian?
I think I like it. Two things I like. When people come to the Historical Society and they want to know when your house was built, it's very difficult. You got to check tax records. Maybe you got to look in newspaper. You know, it's not easy to do. But when we do figure something out for somebody and show them when their house is built, just the excitement, the pure excitement that people get when they figure out when their house is built. Or the same thing when somebody comes and they don't know who their great-grandparents are, and we're able to provide them with an answer. Well, here you go. Here's your family tree. And we can show them some document from their relative. It's really exciting. And they just the pleasure you give people by finding information for them that they didn't expect that you would find is really nice.
So do you walk them through the steps, or do you go beyond that to try to find?
It depends. Sometimes I know that I can find the answer for them, mm-hmm. and so I might do it. It depends how busy I am.
Okay.
Or I might let them, you know, look at the, give them the steps. But usually I stick something in front of them that's gonna help them. Yeah.
Do you use any of the computer services they have now?
I think, you know, that when, you know, computers first started, you know, using the internet, and you were supposed to use the computer to find stuff, there was hardly anything available there. But as time has gone on, yes, the computer's been great, especially in newspaper search engines. So you can get onto a website, that has newspapers that you can search by keyword, newspapers have been digitized, and you can find things in the newspaper that you were not able to find before. So you can find an obituary something that helps people with the story. So yes, newspaper search engines are probably the number one way we find new information about the battle or about the town or about history. One thing is interesting about this, we're Adams County, and early on when they started digitizing newspapers, for some reason, they were doing it alphabetically. So all Adams County's newspapers got done early on. And so it's not so easy looking up something in Philadelphia, but in Adams County, we got a ton of stuff digitized already. And I suspect that as time goes on, more newspapers will be digitized and we'll find even more stuff.
I feel as if we're blessed because of your passion. What would you have done if you didn't? Well, first of all, it's amazing that as a 14-year-old, you drive a bicycle a few hours.
Oh, it wasn't that far, yeah. Back roads, too.
Yeah, back roads to come and just be on the battlefield.
Yeah.
But not only the battlefield. I'm sure at 14 you were going out visiting people, talking to people, hanging around some of the tour guides, possibly.
Yeah.
They knew you at that point?
Oh, yeah, I knew. I always think, too, that I see we're going to go there. I had, when I was young, tried to get a job at the Carroll County Historical Society in Westminster. And at that time, there's still some of those descendants of the Shrivers there. And, of course, I lived in Silver Run, not far from Union Mills, that was run by the Shriver ladies. And I tried to volunteer there, and they didn't like me. I don't know why they didn't like me. Young kid, whippersnapper, trying to get involved in history. So Carroll County sort of scorned me from working at their historical society. Ooh. And so I ended up coming to Gettysburg. If the ladies here would have been more open to me, I would be the Carroll County historian.
We're blessed. We're blessed for that, Tim. So what would you have been if you weren't a historian?
Well, I was driving a truck, and I started to dispatch trucks. I started to be the dispatcher, and I was good at knowing, memorization, knowing all the roads in Baltimore City and all the different counties around Baltimore. And we just starting to get into computerizing the delivery routes for trucks. It's hard to imagine that most truck drivers at that time, I would just give them a piece of paper that would say, get on the 695, go around to exit, so-and-so, and get off on Randallstown Road or something. I had maps and books, and I would write the directions for everybody. I probably would have kept doing that. But then I became a tour guide and decided it was an easier way to make money than manual labor.
There you go. There you go. Our blessing. Thanks for your passion. Is there, in your history research, is there anything that you learned that kind of shocked you?
I don't know if there's always surprising twists or turns in history, and I don't know that I think it excites me when I learn new facts or I find something in the newspaper. I don't know if I'm shocked by things I find. Sometimes I guess I expect to find dramatic things or maybe since I'm from Maryland, maybe when I was younger, I was more open-minded about Southerners as opposed to, whether I was a Southerner or a Northerner. Maybe I was more inclined to think there should be Southern monuments when I was a kid. And now, I'm just like, 100% Northerner and very anti-Southern. So I think I would be set for anything in life. As we get older, we get more set in our ways. We end up believing a certain thing. So I think when I was in my younger days, I looked at the Civil War, and to me, it was just all chaos. You know, just everybody fighting and killing each other, and there was no grand purpose or design. And now I guess I drift towards, you know, thinking more like a Northern radical during the Civil War.
Okay. What do you see your future as?
Well, you know, I'm not a person to change or to do anything different. I think I'll just, for the rest of my life, I'm just going to talk about local Adams County history.
Cool. And we're going to benefit from that. And must have been really enjoyable watching the growth and development of the Adams County Historic Society.
Yeah, and just like me, I should say, just like me, the director of the Adams County Historical Society, Andrew Dalton, grew up in Carroll County. And then eventually, his mom got a job at Gettysburg College, moved to Gettysburg, and came to the Adams County Historical Society as a young kid. And we welcomed him with open arms, just like Dr. Gladfelder welcomed me with open arms after I'd been shunned. and we brought him in, and we let him volunteer. And, you know, he talks about those days. He's got great memories of being there. And now he's the director of, you know, Gettysburg History, and he runs not just the Historical Society, but the Gettysburg we got to Hopkins, the Gettysburg History, we got Hopkins House, we got to Shriver House, we got to Gettysburg Film Festival, and he's in charge of all of that.
And there will continue to be expansion?
And there will be continue to be expansion, and hopefully there'll be other people who've moved into the area or people that live in the area that will continue to tell the story of our local community.
You have a passion of the heart for history. What advice would you give other individuals who have the same passion?
Keep at it. I mean, definitely it's difficult. There's a very few jobs relating to history. I mean, most of the time people go to college, and if they're interested in history, you have to become a history teacher. Mm-hmm. There's not a lot of other jobs. But in Gettysburg, that's why I think people gravitate to Gettysburg who have historical interests, because you can work in a shop. Hey, you can work in a restaurant downtown and talk to customers all day long about the Battle of Gettysburg. You can be a tour guide. You know, just do what you want to do and just keep trying.
Being a tour guide, that's a huge benchmark for anybody.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I've been a tour guide for a while, and I do know that even back then, people ascribed to be tour guides. The two things I'd say about it, one is taking around busloads of fifth graders is not as romantic as it might seem. So a lot of people have this romantic view of what it's like to be a tour guide. And sure, there's occasions where you take someone around and you get to talk about, you know, General Longstreet's counter march or the details of the fighting in the wheat field. But most of the time, it's taking someone around who knows nothing about it and has no interest in it and doesn't even know why they got a tour guide. So it's a little romanticized. Mm-hmm. And so we do have also the issue, the tour guides of the National Park Service who administers the test would like people to become tour guides and work. But a lot of people take the test competing against other people who really want to be tour guides, and they have really no intention of doing anything with it, except just to say, hey, I passed the test.
Yes.
So it's become one of those things where people do it because they want to see if they can get through the process.
Mm-hmm. It's fairly tough, right?
Oh, yeah, it is tough.
Okay. Hey, Tim.
Well, thanks for having me.
Thank you for coming in. Is there anything you want to say to this camera here is on you. Is there anything you want to say to the people watching us here about our culture or our history?
In our area, it's hard to avoid history. There are signs and monuments and markers and tablets everywhere. And just I'd say that, it's a great idea just to take a walk in your community. And when you're walking, stop and read one of the historical markers or a wayside exhibit and think about, the people who lived here before us. Get permission from a nearby farmer and go out in that field and look to see if you can find some arrowheads. And when you pick up that arrowhead, you're the first person to pick up something that was fired or dropped, a few thousand years ago.
And when I was growing up, that was a common activity for some people I were hanging around with, walking the fields and collecting the arrowheads. Tim, thank you so much for taking the time to come in and speak with us, with me in general. And thank you so much for committing to be part of our 250th adventure as we work with the New Oxford Historic Society and other local historic societies to bring our culture to life. How do you immerse people in it?
Yeah, well, I hope everybody becomes a big fan of the semi-quincentennial. It's just, if you can memorize the words, I think, that's a tough one to handle, isn't it?
For me it is. So, hey, thanks for watching this segment of Open House here at Community Media. We spent an enjoyable time talking to Tim Smith, who is the Adams County historian, and also a historian at the Adams County Historic Society. Been there at the Historic Society since he was 19 or 20.
Been there for a while.
Yeah, been there for a while, seen all the advancements and helped with building the path forward. So until we have a chance to bring someone else in, it's making a great impact in our community. Stay healthy. And remember that you are the best. Thanks for watching.